NPR and the Futuro Media Group. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we give you our take on Cinco de Mayo, first with a story about a Haitian charro who's winning the hearts of Mexican New Yorkers.
Se me fuera que tanto adoraba.
I remember this song.
Our friends from Alt Latino stop in to share some music with us.
Well, I think, you know, you have to always start the day with a little bit of café, café.
And a public boarding school in Hawaii teaches students how to reconnect with their traditional agriculture.
So this grass helps the soil stay in the ground instead of running off into the ocean.
That's all coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Quédense con nosotros. Stay with us. José Godínez Samperio was a valedictorian in his high school class. He was an Eagle Scout, and he graduated from Florida State University College of Law. Now, like any aspiring lawyer, he wants to take the bar exam in the state of Florida. But there's a catch. He's undocumented. Because the Florida bar does not explicitly prohibit undocumented immigrants from admission, the case has been taken up by the state Supreme Court. Godínez Samperio is not alone. To discuss this case and others like it around the country is legal scholar Raquel Aldana. She's a professor of law at McGeorge School of Law at the University of the Pacific, and she joins us from Sacramento, California. Welcome, Professor Aldana.
Thank you so much, Maria, for having me on the show.
So here we have a young man who goes to law school, even though he overstayed his visa. He came here legally. How many cases are there out there like this? And how is it that somebody who is undocumented can get all the way through law school in the United States?
Well, we did a paper and research, and on the basis of some interviews with law schools, we estimate that we're talking perhaps about 100 students. Now, why law schools are admitting the students, you know, the federal government regulates higher education differently than it regulates employers. There's no prohibition for admitting and graduating or even granting in-state tuition. The 1996 laws that Congress passed left it up to the states to make those kinds of choices.
So José Godínez Samperio has never denied that he overstayed his visa and that he doesn't have proper immigration status in the country. Frankly, he could have taken the test under the radar. What is this notion then about students who are graduating from law school wanting access to the bar, and yet others who say, you broke a law, therefore you have no capacity to be admitted to the bar in the United States?
One of the things to clarify is that admissions to the bar does not in any way resolve the legal status of these graduates. They remain undocumented and they remain subject to deportation. And so the bar associations are not making a judgment on whether or not in the conferral of a license to practice law either grants them any status and or the right to work in the United States. Now, why the bar should care, though, about the undocumented status is because bar committees are assessing not only basic competencies when these students take the bar exam, but they're also judging moral character to practice law, qualities of honesty, fairness, candor, trustworthiness, and a respect and obedience to the rule of law. And it becomes complicated because, and I say young kids, because most of them came in brought by their parents. And in order to remain in the United States, they're often, for survival reasons, forced into other kinds of things like getting a driver's license for which they may not be eligible. And all of these things add up in ways that must be assessed by the bar to see whether they should weigh into the assessment of good moral character.
And there are probably some people who say, you know, if he's done all of those things, then he shouldn't be admitted to the bar because he did break the law. And then on the other side, there will be people who say, but the problem is immigration law now really leaves no legal way to get from point A to point B.
Correct. And I'm not suggesting Jose or any of these other undocumented students haven't broken the law. They have. But one of the things to look at is why they broke the law. Some people buy into the argument, well, maybe they're not responsible for the illegal entry because it was really their parents. But at the moment they turn 18, they become adults, the agency switches. But what do you expect them to do? Some of them came at 17 months. And so what happens to these students is that in order to remain and in order to survive, they must do these things that for any of us isn't breaking a law. Getting a driver's license is not breaking a law. Getting a job is not breaking a law. They're just living, but the law itself has created, if you will, a culture of illegality around these kids that makes it impossible for them just to live without breaking a law. Their very presence in this country is illegal. So the bar has to weigh not just the illegality of their conduct, but whether that illegality in some ways demonstrates bad moral character. And if it doesn't because of the circumstances, then they ought to be admitted.
All right, well, we'll keep an eye on this, but thanks for your research, Professor.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Professor Raquel Aldana is at McGeorge School of Law at the University of the Pacific. She spoke to us from Sacramento. For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word, and we're back in 30 seconds, so stay with us. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Every Cinco de Mayo, Guillermo de la Luz puts on one of his colorful mariachi outfits and steps on stage to entertain thousands of New Yorkers. Sounds pretty typical, right? Well, there's a catch. Guillermo de la Luz is the stage name for a Haitian charro mariachi singer who is winning the hearts of Mexican New Yorkers. Latino USA's Andres Caballero has our story.
Picture a tall black man wearing a bright red charro outfit, white boots, and a white sombrero to match.
My name is Guy Bisset, but my artistic name is Guillermo de la Luz.
It's Saturday morning, and he's about to perform at the Manhattan Neighborhood Network, a local television show where singers get a chance to be seen by producers sniffing around for talent. The crowd isn't always this large, but today, a lot of the performers arrived with their fans. Before leaving to change into his charro outfit, De La Luz hands the producer of the show a CD with the tracks he wants them to play. He's fourth in line.
I'm wearing the red colors because my skin color, this color ain't match black people.
You look good.
I'm making audio now.
Arriba, arriba.
Everyone give a big applause for Guillermo De La Luz.
Yes! Come on, do it.
While a boy in Haiti, De La Luz sang in Latin at a Catholic church. But when he turned 17, he ran into something that changed his life. A Mexican film called La Bala Perdida.
Las balas perdidas pegaron.
He heard the mariachi music on it. He was two singers who were singing there. Antonio Aguilar and Miguel Aceves Mejía. They were singing together. And since that time, and I discovered Mexico, the culture, the folk, the outfits that they have is beautiful. And since that time, then I start to fall in love of Mexico.
La Bala Perdida, or The Lost Bullet, was part of the charro film genre during the golden age of Mexican cinema, between the 30s and 60s.
Since I watched it, and I started to interpret the Mexican music and learning the words, the meanings, and went to school and to learn how to speak Spanish, and then to be able to cantar bien.
De La Luz got to New York in 1981, and soon after, he met a woman who invited him to sing at a Mexican cultural event inside a church. So he sang one of the songs by his beloved Mexican charro legend.
The song say, ay, amigo, ¿qué crees que pasó?
Se me fuera que tanto adoraba.
I remember this song.
But singing wasn't enough. If he wanted to be a real charro, he needed to look like a charro.
And then all the Spanish people say, wow, guy, why are you not wearing Mexican suits? I said, no, I'm not Mexican.
But it was only a matter of weeks until he started making his very own traje de charro. He even orders his sombreros from Mexico. And he wears different colored outfits every time he performs.
I have a moño. Moño, this is a tight. Combine the colors, right?
Steffi V has co-hosted the show at the Manhattan Neighborhood Network for the past 4 years.
A lot of people do go up to him, ask him questions, especially because he speaks both Spanish and Creole. So a lot of people do like it, especially the Spanish people that know this music, because they're like, wow, look, you know, other people from other countries are doing my music.
Like most musicians in search of the dream, De La Luz has to sustain himself with a regular job during the week. He works late-night shifts guarding construction sites around the city, and he takes his iPod and fine-tunes his voice to the songs he'll be performing the following weekend.
If I have 60 songs and to sing, I have to listen all those 16 songs on the iPod and make sure I give good pronunciations, and then I'm not como se dice en español, descuadrado. And then when people see me with my iPod on the train, they think I'm just listening to the music. No, I'm learning.
And after years of hard work, El Charro Haitiano seems to have gotten the hang of it. Fans leave him comments on his website and consider him an ambassador of Mexican culture. He's also received endless awards from local Latino organizations.
If you want to learn something, whatever the language, whatever the styles, if you don't give up, you're going to get it. That's what I did years ago.
De La Luz has never been to Mexico or to a Spanish-speaking country, but he's been able to cross cultural boundaries into New York's Latino community. For Latino USA, I'm Andres Caballero in New York.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Cinco de Mayo may be as much a marketing gimmick as genuine celebration of the historic Batalla de Puebla, the Battle of Puebla, that freed Mexico from the yoke of French colonialism. But we want to celebrate it nonetheless, with music. So we called on our friends, Felix Contreras and Jasmine Gartz, host of NPR's Alt Latino podcast, to share some music by Mexican and Mexican-American artists they thought would put our listeners in a festive but thoughtful mood about the celebration of Cinco de Mayo. Welcome back to Latino USA, Jasmine and Felix.
¿Qué pasó, María? How are you?
Hey, Felix, how are you?
Hey, María, ¿cómo estás?
All right, so let's start by talking about this band. It's called Radio Jarocho. The album is Café Café, and you like this song, Café Café.
Well, I think, you know, you have to always start the day with a little bit of Café Café. And I think this is such an example of a beautiful traditional son jarocho. And I have to say, it's way sexier and more bumping than a lot of songs I've heard at nightclubs recently. So let's listen to it. This is son jarocho doing Café Café. Amada Marcelina, me despiertas de mañana. Amada Marcelina, me despiertas de mañana. Justo que sale sol y te metes en mi cama. Justo que sale sol y te metes en mi cama. Me da lo que me gusta endulzado con panela. Me da lo que me gusta endulzado con panela. Con su buen piquete y su rajita de canela. Con su buen piquete y su rajita de canela.
You know, as soon as you hear jarocho, there might be some people who don't know what we're talking about. So explain it to us. Break it down for us.
Well, jarocho is anything from Veracruz. It's an adjective used to describe something from Veracruz. And son jarocho is the musical style of Veracruz. And it fuses indigenous, Spanish, and African musical elements. Probably for listeners who aren't that familiar with jarocho, they do know one famous jarocho song, which is La Bamba.
Oh, right, because that's basically the song that introduced jarocho in a mainstream, massive
right.
way.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks for that primer. But we're going to move on from Son Jarocho in Veracruz to a little bit further north, Austin. And of course, Alejandro Escobedo, part of the large Escobedo family. And the song that you're loving for Cinco de Mayo is Sabor a Mí. Just even saying those words, I'm like, oh my God, I got to hear this song. So let me hear a little bit of Alejandro Escobedo and Sabor a Mí.
Tanto tiempo disfrutamos de este amor, nuestras almas se acercan, tanto así que yo guardo tu sabor, como tú llevas también sabor.
I need to go to a beach like right now.
Oh, really? I see and feel bar.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a very old classic song. I mean, I played that song in high school when I was in high school bands, and that was a long time ago, longer than I care to admit. It's a very classic bolero. Alejandro Escamedo is he's like a musician's musician. He's always been kind of bubbling under, just under the radar into really big superstardom. But the people who like him really like him. He's based in Austin. He's been doing a number of different things over the years. But he's got that whole Austin Mexican rock thing, more rock and rockabilly than anything else. He did like cowpunk, what they called a cowpunk for a while. This is one of his first, I think his very first song performing in Spanish.
I don't know. I just get a feeling of the influence of Chicano serious R&B.
Yeah, there's definitely that in his music. But in this one, he's moving back into the whole, you can't avoid it with Saborami. I mean, El Chicano did it, I think it was in 72 on their album, Celebración, I think it was called. I mean, it's been such a part of the Chicano landscape in the Southwest since the early 70s. And then even beyond.
So that track, Saborami, from the album Big Station, which has not been released yet, but is coming soon from Austin, Texas, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now let's move on to another artist, La Santa Cecilia. What song are you liking from Santa Cecilia?
Well, they just released this cover of the song Tainted Love, which a lot of people think belongs to Soft Cell from the 80s, but it's actually originally from the 1960s. Gloria Jones sang it in R&B version in 1965. And then Soft Cell did something very new wavy with it in the 80s. The lead singer, Marisol, the lead singer for Santa Cecilia, she has a very soulful, bolero-like voice, and her version definitely approximates the original. This is off of their EP, El Valor.
Got this kind of blues thing for Cinco de Mayo going on. What's up with that?
I don't know. Are we melancholy?
Are you guys upset about the Batalla de Puebla, or are you more upset about the fact that Cinco de Mayo has become this huge, you know, commercial event?
I think I miss Mexico.
Andale.
I didn't even notice that. You know, there's not a lot of festive music for parties and stuff on this playlist. But you know, I guess maybe it is time for a little bit of introspection.
Yeah, maybe it's time to figure out what celebrating our heritage means beyond Cinco de Brinco.
All right. On your Cinco de Mayo, go beyond.
There you go.
Thanks so much to Jasmine Gartz and Felix Contreras from Alt Latino, the podcast from NPR.
Thank you so much, Maria. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Maria.
Get away. You don't really want it anymore from me. To make things right, you need someone to hold you tight. And you think love is to pray, but I'm sorry, I don't pray that way. Once I ran to you.
Coming up, we go across the Pacific to Hawaii to meet a young man with a love of nature and an ambition to grow the ancient crops of his ancestors. Another story in our series of connecting to nature in powerful ways. That's coming up. No se vayan. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Now, across the Pacific, to Hawaii, where centuries ago, ancient Polynesians arrived with taro, bananas, and breadfruit, the beginning of agriculture on the islands. Generations later, big sugar and pineapple plantations eclipsed small farms, and young people didn't learn how to cultivate the old crops. As part of our special series on people connecting to nature in powerful ways, DeMay Roberts visits Lahaina Luna High School, a public boarding school on Maui, where students are now reconnecting with their agricultural past.
Lahaina Luna High School sits on top of a hill with a panorama overlooking the town of Lahaina. Farther off in the distance, you can see the ocean and the green island of Molokai. Students bring their lunch outside every day to enjoy the beautiful view before getting back to their studies. Students like Nainoa Kayama.
I usually only spend like 3 or 4 hours indoors and like a good 5 or 6 hours outdoors.
Besides his academics, Nainoa's job at the school is to dig irrigation ditches and install pipes and the sprinkler system to water the gardens, something he takes pride in doing.
I learned how to do irrigation my freshman year.
He points to a crisscross of thin pipes interwoven among the plants in the garden.
This is irrigation, a drip line. Basically, it's just you hook it up to a main line, main PVC pipe, and you put an adapter in, and then you put the drip line into the adapter, and you can turn it in any which way you want it to go, and it waters all day by drip. I did all this. Drip line comes all the way over here.
Nainoa Kayama is Hawaiian and Mexican. His family has owned a ranch for several generations, and Nainoa, as an only child, decided to come to Lahaina Luna High School to learn more about growing crops on his family's land.
This is like, there's a lot of pili grass and tea leaf, red tea leaf, kalo, sweet potato, or papaya. That's a good eating. Tea leaf, you could boil a tea leaf and use it as like a patch for a bruise or something, or they wrap Hawaiian food called lau lau in luau leaf, and yeah, they also use tea leaf for leis, and yeah, these are native plants. These plants right here, these pili grasses, it's helped to keep the soil from eroding when the rain comes and washing down dirt. Like, it's really bad for the environment, so this grass helps the soil stay in the ground instead of running off into the ocean. They like to put it along by the slopes because that's where the water runs, yeah.
Aina is the Hawaiian word for land, but people in Hawaii use the word to describe their love of the natural world. Nainoa says that most Hawaiian kids, like him, spend the majority of their lives outside, eating meals and, as Hawaiians say, talk story or shoot the breeze with their families.
I don't know, I just don't like sitting down and doing nothing. Like, I like to be outside doing stuff. I'd rather be outside because inside it just kind of get antsy, and I don't know, I don't really like to watch TV. I never did, so I would be more into sports or fishing or something else. I wouldn't just not do nothing. I just want to move around and do something, and agriculture, at least I'm doing something productive. I like to work at the land because seeing a lot of green trees and green grass, it just makes me feel good, and knowing that there's fish in the ocean and the ocean is clean, that's just what I want to make sure. Like, I just always want to make everything better so everyone can experience the same thing as me. Pepper. Pepper.
Keith Idioka is Nainoa's agriculture teacher. Idioka grew up in Maui and graduated from Lahaina Luna High School.
The kind of students that we have that like to take our courses, like to work outside, like to work with their hands, like to work with plants and animals, with living things, like to watch things grow.
Idioka says many of the boarding school students have a hard time adjusting to being away from home and to the structure and regimen of the school, which includes academics and work chores throughout the day. Idioka says Nainoa at first showed disrespect for the rules, but now has a lot of responsibility.
I've known Nainoa Kayama from his freshman year, ninth grade. He had a lot of issues, behavioral devious behavior, just not listening, not following basic rules, classroom rules, safety rules. I had a hard time with him, but over the past 2 years, he's grown, he's changed. He evolved into one of our students that we can count on, can depend on, can trust, and he's become one of our role models for our younger students. Everybody's seen the change in him.
Many of the young farmers here at Lahaina Luna High School have plans to major in agriculture in college. The Maui School Garden Network says on Maui about 85% of Maui's food is imported. Idioko works with the Garden Network to teach students ways to have pride in their love for the land as well as traditional food ways.
Parents having had worked in the plantations as laborers, field workers, I think there'll always be some of that stigma. The stigma is like the dirt farmer, dirty and just working with dirt and just uneducated and pay is low. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I sense that sometimes, but I think it's changing. And there is a young generation of farmers that are educated, and I think it's cool to be a farmer now on Maui.
For Nainoa Kayama, being a farmer, working outside and with the land, is about providing a future for his family and showing a way that Hawaii can be less dependent on importing food.
Right now, we are kind of dependent on the mainland for a lot of our food, but we could be sustainable if you like. We just need more people to buy locally and just buy from local people, so the local people have more money to expand and grow more things, and we could be sustainable. But right now, we just need the people to buy locally. That's what we need right now. In Big Island, my dad, my uncle guys are all fishermen, farmers, and that's one thing they always preach, buy local, keep it local. I want to make sure that I pass on pride to my kids to make sure that they can do the best they can on whatever they do for the farms or the ocean, just try to do their best.
For Latino USA, I'm Dime Roberts, Lahaina, Hawaii.
And for this week, that's Latino USA. If you have any comments or suggestions about Latino USA, call our new listener line. It's 646-571-1228. That's 646-571-1228. Please say your name clearly and tell us where you're calling from. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Nadia Raymond, Andres Caballero, and Michael Jones. We had special help this week from Michael Johnson, NPR New York, and Neil Rausch. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Funding for our series, Radio Nature, is provided by the REI Foundation, supporting today's youth to develop a lifetime commitment to nature and the outdoors.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.